following is an unrehearsed interview with Mr. Joe McDaniel of Cynthiana for the Kentucky Oral History Commission. The interview is being conducted on June 19, 1985 at the offices of the Burley Tobacco Growers Cooperative Association. And the interviewer is John Clee. Mr. McDaniel, you've been working with the cooperative for some years. Tell me a little bit about your background, where you were born and raised.
Well, I was born in Harrison County, mm-hmm. and November the 22nd, 1910. And I've been associated with the tobacco effort for right at 30 years, being a member of the Burley Board.
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. And we've had our ups and downs over the years, but up until 1982, we have managed to conduct the loan program.
Yes, sir.
In conjunction with the Commodity Credit, a branch of the federal government, and supporting the price of Burley tobacco. And it has been of inestimable value to the farmers that produce Burley tobacco.
Tell me how the Burley Growers Cooperative works in conjunction with the whole program. For example, if I'm a farmer and I have a pile of tobacco on the warehouse floor, now when does the cooperative get it?
Well, when the farmer takes his tobacco to the warehouse floor, it's graded.
Yes, sir.
By a government grader, and each grade has a support price according to the quality and so forth. And if it fails to bring a dollar over the support price for that particular grade, it automatically goes to the loan program.
Okay.
We take that tobacco and process it and put it in strip grades. Those strip grades are made up of several different grades of that same quality tobacco mm-hmm. that we're told that the manufacturers recommended to go in that strip grade. We have, I think, 15 different strip grades made up of the total reeds that appear on the floor.
Yes.
Some will mingle with the others and some won't.
Now there's dozens of those grades on the floor. Aren't
yes, there? There's over 100 grades.
I see. So you kind of reduce that down to these 15 strip
15
grades.
Strip grades that the manufacturers say that they can use, you know.
Now you've more or less conferred with the manufacturers.
That's right.
About what they might want in the future.
They set it up and recommended these particular grades to go into this strip blend.
Okay. And you don't actually take possession of the tobacco.
Act as an agent for the federal government in carrying on the support program.
The Growers Association does.
Yes.
So the government's more or less said, we're going to let you handle this.
That's right. We have contract with Commodity Credit or the Tobacco Agriculture Department mm-hmm. in carrying on this activity.
I see. Now, I've heard people use the expression, the government got that tobacco. In effect, that's really not true, is it?
Well, it still belongs to the farmer.
Yes, sir.
And if we can process and store it and some future date we have a buyer for it and we can sell it at a profit or even get out on it while we sell it.
Sure.
Of course, in the meantime, we, the farmers or the co-op is carrying on the storage costs and the interest involved.
Yes, sir, and the processing and those
yes,
kinds of costs.
Sure.
All those costs.
Absolutely.
Now, the the cooperative is actually controlled then by the farmers that are involved in the program.
Well, yes, to a certain extent. Of course, we are under the regulation of the Department of Agriculture.
Yes, sir.
And of course, they have the final say. If they say sell a crop, well, we have to sell it.
Yeah. For example, you're the president of the Cooperative Association. And you were elected, I guess, by the board of directors.
We have 22 different districts.
Yes, sir.
Made up of our board here, and three representatives at large, mm-hmm. which makes 25. They're elected in these different districts and they constitute the board. And the board in turn elects the officers of the association.
And they were, these people out there in the, these district representatives were elected by the farmers.
That's right.
That are involved in the program.
That's right.
Okay.
Anybody that's ever delivered tobacco to the association is a member of the Tobacco Growers Co-op. Automatically.
Yeah. And your history goes back over half the history, I guess, of this organization, but the history even goes back farther than that. Can you tell me a little bit about the early history?
Oh, I'm not too familiar with that. I know they had a terrible time. The first co-op, you know, they didn't have any teeth in it. In
yes,
federal
sir.
Law, you could sign up that you'd hold your tobacco and hold it for a price, but the person that didn't sign, why, he dumped his tobacco and got a better price than ones that helped it, you know.
Yes, sir.
Then that older trial and error, well, actually there's been people killed over this thing, you know.
That's true. Yeah.
And tobacco beds sold in grass seeds,
sure.
Burned,
yes,
and so forth.
Uh-huh.
Or even sent down, they had a killing over this.
Mm-hmm. That was that early, those
well,
the
early,
those
yeah,
wars.
Yeah.
But then it was during the Depression, I guess, when the government got into the AAA programs.
That's when
where this was
that's
really,
right.
Got some
and
teeth.
Of course, Barry Bingham, the editor of Courier Journal,
mm-hmm.
was quite instrumental in promoting this thing.
I see.
I think he let the cooperatives $1 million to set it up.
Mm-hmm.
Then the Congress finally put teeth in it.
Yes, sir.
And that's when we began to have stability on the price support,
mm-hmm.
and production control.
I see. So. You know, in your tenure with this group, those the price supports and the production control has kept the tobacco farmer in pretty good shape.
Yes, we've managed. Of course, over the period, we've come from a very low price up to $1.88, I believe, maybe the top was at one time. So we were experiencing inflation over that time.
Mm-hmm.
Then in 1982, we experienced the added tax, double taxation, from 8 cents a pack to 16 cents, federal tax,
mm-hmm.
outside of various state taxes increasing tremendously, and even city taxes in some instances.
I see. Yeah.
Then we had the health problem come along on us.
Mm-hmm.
Then we had the situation of the high dollar in relation to foreign currency.
Yes, sir.
And that slowed up exports.
Mm-hmm. All this has hit at the same time.
All hit at the same time. And,
mm-hmm.
and this past year, the pace of cigarette consumption is down.
Is that right?
Rather drastically.
Mm-hmm. Let me take you back to when you first became affiliated with the organization, I guess would be the mid-50s.
Yeah.
When you came on as a director.
That's right.
Okay. What was the Burley situation like then, as far as the supply and demand, those kinds of things?
Well, that one year there, we had a tremendous oversupply.
Oh, you did.
And along about that time, Mr. John Willie Jones was president at that time,
mm-hmm.
and Mr. John Berry was the vice president as well as legal counsel.
Mm-hmm.
They had a lot of top quality tip tobacco and red tobacco that
mm-hmm.
they weren't, the cigarette manufacturer wasn't using at that time. And incidentally, now that's the type primarily was. So
you've seen a change in even what the manual was.
So anyway, what I'm fixing to tell you,
uh-huh.
I was told that I wasn't present, but a fellow named Dick Travis came by,
mm-hmm.
and he was a farmer and had experience in blending. He was a blending expert with various companies.
Mm-hmm.
He said, I think I can sell this tobacco for you. So they put him on the payroll, and he actually sold this tobacco to the world,
mm-hmm.
and got him over that hump. But this fortunate, he came by and he did a splendid job.
Uh-huh.
relieve him of that situation at that time.
Now, the people that the co-op has to deal with, the manufacturers and any kind of customer, I guess you can find.
Any customer that's certified and got the money.
Yes, sir.
And buy the back.
Uh-huh. Now, how have those customers been fairly consistent over the years? For example, staying like in the 1950s, were there?
That's right. They we just took really the overflow.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the companies knew it was available here at whatever time they saw fit to buy it, you know. And it's worked very well with them, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But now we've got well over 500 million pounds.
Yes, sir. Well, back in when you first began, then this operation was working very, very smoothly.
Very nicely.
Because very nice. At that time, the farmers didn't have any extra cost to pay for this program.
That's right. Well, in 1982, as you very well know, that the government said that in order to have this program,
yes,
you got to guarantee that it won't be any loss to the taxpayers, which we're involved in.
Yeah. When I addressed that issue, you know, that was a charge that, you know, we shouldn't lose any money on this, but had the co-op really lost very much money over the years?
The Burley Association hadn't lost. In mm-hmm. fact, up in 1982, we had returned to the farmers about $32 million in mm-hmm. gains
yeah.
over the period.
Now tell me how that would work. For example, you took the tobacco didn't bring the price, and you bought it, and of course you had to process it and store it,
that's
pay
right.
the interest on it.
That's right.
Now, where did that money come from to do all that? That comes
from the government.
From the Commodity
yes.
Credit Association.
Yes.
Now, do you have to pay them back with interest?
Oh, sure.
I see.
Absolutely.
So they just gave you kind of they said, we're here for the loan.
The history of the program, we had been able to mark up our product enough to cover the cost.
I see. Uh-huh.
Plus $32 million.
Right. And that was returned to the farmers?
Yes. Of course, it builds up by the month, you know.
Yes, sir. You mean the cost?
The cost,
oh,
yeah.
Yes, sir. Uh-huh. Now, those, when we're talking about those processing costs and so forth, who does the co-op deal with? The different people throughout the state?
Well, of course, we deal with the processors mm-hmm. first, you know,
yeah.
then the storage people, which are generally the processors.
Mm-hmm.
And they agree on a carrying charge,
mm-hmm.
and that's okayed by commodity credit.
I see.
Practically all things we do is passed on by the department, you know.
They have to be checked off.
Yes.
Now, the commodity credit, is it really under, it's really under the auspices of the Department of Agriculture?
That's right.
I see.
That's right.
Uh-huh. So, are those costs fairly consistent across state? For example, if you're dealing with a processor in Lexington,
oh,
a
yes.
processor in Maysville?
Well, they have to be.
They have to be the same.
But, because there's no one processor, no two processors, or even three, can process 200-300 million pounds of tobacco.
Right.
And they're located in strategic places where the shipping charges, getting the tobacco to and from the storages, you know,
mm-hmm.
that has quite an impact on the cost, you know.
I see.
We wouldn't want to take tobacco in Louisville, for instance,
mm-hmm.
or Bowling Green and take it to Maysville,
right.
or vice versa, you know.
Yes, sir. Now, the this organization is called the Burley Co-op. Does it include more than one state, for example?
Oh, yes. We operate in five states. Kentucky, West Virginia, Indiana, Ohio, and Missouri.
I see.
That's five, isn't it?
Yes, sir. So you are taking under loan tobacco from all those different,
yes.
organizations. Now
we have a comparable association in Tennessee, mm-hmm. Tennessee Stabilization. They operate in Tennessee and Virginia and the northern part of North Carolina where they grow the burley.
Now they're dealing with burley also.
Yes, same setup, same prices. We integrate them.
I see. How has the cooperation between those two organizations
been? Splendid.
Been
no
good.
Problem at all.
I see.
But you know, I don't know if this is the proper place to inject it,
mm-hmm.
But really, what caused the dilemma we're in at present? To be truthful,
yes, sir.
As I view it, there's nobody but Fluke here at the back. They have not maintained a true supply situation.
Well, since you brought it up, let's go ahead and talk about that now. Now, the Flu Cure has a similar organization like this.
That's right.
What has gone wrong there? Because they've had a big oversupply in the last.
Oh yeah, then the government is for our 1982 crop. They've got several hundred million pounds of tobacco that the government's going to take a loss on.
They are going to do that.
Oh no question. They've discounted it. Uh-huh. Well, you can buy tobacco there now, 14 cents a pound.
I didn't realize that.
Discounted up to 90% of the cost of it. Mm-hmm. And they still got it.
Still can't sell it, huh?
Yeah.
Well, what's the problem? Is it is just too much of it, or?
The world full of burley tobacco. It got so remunerative. Mm-hmm. Everybody wanted to get in on the tobacco program.
I see.
And now we're faced. We've got the lower export price, or we are out of business. Mm-hmm. We're competing with foreign tobacco producers all over the world.
Yes, sir.
And we've got to meet our, mm-hmm. got to be market oriented, or we're not going to sell tobacco.
Now, have you noticed, of course, you deal with customers. Do you deal with very many foreign customers?
Oh, yeah, through dealers.
Mm-hmm, through the dealers.
In fact, the original law, as I understand it, that we sell tobacco to anybody that has the proper credentials. Mm-hmm. And that the law says we should go through the regular channels of trade.
Mm-hmm. Which is?
So we go through the export associations.
Mm-hmm. Now, have they, when the dollar got so strong and the supply got so big, did you notice a drop in the feelers out from the dealer? They just weren't interested much anymore.
Well, of course, they import it as well as export it.
Right. Uh-huh.
So it's a two-way street. They're in business for their directors like we are for the farmers.
Sir.
So they import it. Mm-hmm. And to be truthful, the big companies in this country have supported foreign-grown tobacco. They furnish the money, the know-how.
Yes, sir.
They've taken experts out of this country and sent them to foreign countries to teach them how to do it.
Right. So those.
So that's your competition you're involved in.
Right. They kind of created their own separate market other than.
That's right. And of course, when the International Trade Commission come along and vote 5-1 that imports are not directly detrimental to our own tobacco growing industry by. You're at the mercy of tobacco all over the world.
Now, were you involved in trying to fight that decision or trying to influence
that
decision?
Oh, sure, uh-huh. Sure. That's nothing else to do, you know.
Sure. You saw that as really one of the main problems.
I think that has a tremendous effect.
I see. Going back to that flu cure oversupply, what did they do wrong down there? Did they just not?
Well, I'm not, I just really don't know the details, but I do know the end result.
Right. And of course, they were in such a dire situation, people that didn't really know threw in the air-cured burley people with the flu-cured. This area is, in, to a certain extent, paying for some of their mistakes, you think?
Well, we're going to take the rep along with them.
I see.
No question about that, because we're all together when we go to Congress.
Yeah.
At least we hope we're together.
Right.
I can't say that there's any unity from their standpoint, but as far as Burley concerned, we're pretty well unified.
Yeah. I want to get into that issue after we trace more of the history. In the 1960s, of course, again, you were still on the board at that time.
Yes.
That was when the health scare first came out. Did you see any changes in the business of the co-op at that time? Did it affect?
Oh, very little. Very little. Mm-hmm. But it gained momentum as the years passed, you know.
I see.
And it has a, well, this the labeling on cigarettes, for instance.
Yes, sir.
Package. And the smoking places.
Right. Yeah. You believe it has it?
Oh, I'm sure it has a definite effect.
Right. What about the switch from, you talked about there was an oversupply in the 50s. What was the supply like in the 60s?
Oh, some years there we took a tremendous amount of tobacco, but we managed to store it and come out on it all right.
Nice.
Of course, it was some years over the history. Some years we lost some money, but we over the good years we managed. The overall picture has been good.
Well, the reason I'm asking that question is I think some people look at the oversupply today and maybe think it's kind of a unique situation, but the co-op's dealt with oversupplies in the past.
That's right, but we had different conditions.
I see.
We didn't have a decrease in consumption.
Yes, sir.
Or increase in production. Well, in the 1982 crop, we had 810 million pounds of burley tobacco, green wheat, the biggest crop in history.
Mm-hmm. At the same time, you already had a...
And had a good support on it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But these things caved in, and we find ourselves in a position we are experiencing today.
Now, when they switched from the acreage controls to the poundage controls, was that in a response to an oversupply?
Well, yes, you know... We've often referred to it as, when they measure these fields, they use rubber tapes, you know. They stretch the, and that contributed to it. It really, we were controlling pounds and not acreage. And that helped tremendously at that time.
And then the next big change, I guess, in the actual program was this no net cost.
That in 82, that's what put a cap on it.
Well, tell me how you feel about that, or...
Well, the first year we paid a cent a pound.
Yes, sir.
And we took a tremendous amount of tobacco.
Mm-hmm.
Next year it went up to 19.
Yes, sir.
This year, 85, if something's not done to lower the support price from $1.75, we're going to take another walloping, and the no-net cost will probably be 50 cents a pound.
I see.
In order to guarantee no loss.
Now, that money that they take in, does the co-op deal with that money in any way?
We collect it from the warehouse. It flows through us, through the bank, and goes directly to commodity credit.
I see.
And we draw interest on it, which is about, now there's about $104 million in that fund.
Yes,
and it varies just to what we pay on our interest, on our borrowing. It's somewhere about a cent and a half to 2 cents below that they pay us on it. And then that goes to the cost of manipulating the thing.
Yes, sir. We've been talking about the Commodity Credit Association. Tobacco is considered and has been considered historically a commodity.
That's the beauty part about it. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it keeps, well, burley does. Now, Fluke, you're that problem with bugs. You know, they have to spray so often. Uh-huh. It's high sugar content.
I see.
But burley tobacco keep. We've had tobacco up to 10 years old and no problem.
Yes, sir.
Uh-huh. And they like the quality of burley tobacco in the blended cigarette.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It seems that this area in the burley area that produce, it's much higher quality. And they've got to have some of that to mix with this bland imported tobacco.
Yeah. So,
and I think it'll always be a differential in the price of it,
mm-hmm.
the original price. Of course, they have some import duty now to pay on it.
Right. So you do believe that there's this uniqueness about the burley grown in this area?
Oh, absolutely.
There's demand by the companies.
That's right.
That. The reason I mentioned that about commodities, none of the other commodities that are protected have to do the same kind of thing that tobacco is doing. Do you feel like it's been singled out? Or?
Well, tobacco, unfortunately, is not a food.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that they say is killing everybody, but I've been smoking for 50 years, and I'm still around. It may not have hit me, but I enjoy it.
Yeah.
But, well, take for instance the dairy people.
Yes, sir.
They have high support. Now, they don't have any production control. And they have given away dried milk, cheese, butter. And if they don't control production, really, they'll fill Mama Cave with dried milk.
That's true. Well, that's what's unusual.
So it really don't make sense when you get down to the common sense of it, the way I view it.
The government is taking substantial losses on these other commodities.
Sure.
But it doesn't want to do the same thing with the demand.
Well, wheat, corn people, they don't want to have any production control. Mm-hmm. It's all free will. There's nothing mandatory about it.
Yeah.
And they've had, up until now, pretty good support. Mm-hmm. Now, I guess all the grain bins in the United States is full of wheat and corn.
That's true. Yeah, a tremendous crop, I think, this morning.
So you've got to have a balance between supply and demand. It all goes back to supply and demand.
Now, who established that over the years that you worked with the co-op?
Well, it's based on parity.
Mm-hmm. Explain that.
Parity of cost. Mm-hmm. Parity of right. Of a livelihood. And, of course, we maintain, largely through Mr. Berry, that the formula, the index, had the prices of feeder cattle, for instance, or the price of a $100,000 combine mm-hmm. went into the cost of burley tobacco. Well, that should never have been. And the cost, really, of buying the right to grow tobacco. Mm-hmm. The fellow, well, tobacco's $4.75, whatever you got for it. He could afford to go out here and buy some quota, rent.
Yes.
Well, that really don't go into the cost of producing burley tobacco. Mm-hmm. Yeah. If I don't want to buy it, my cost is related to fertilizer and
labor
mm-hmm. and chemicals to some extent.
So what you're saying is that this parity price has been overblown by all these.
They should never have been in there. It's mm-hmm. obvious.
Yeah.
But the economists put those in there to our maybe detriment over the years.
Do you think that was politics or to try to please the farmer and get him?
Well, I would hesitate to say that, but you know, this is the age of information.
Yes, sir.
We punch these computers.
Uh-huh.
And if you punch the wrong button, well, it's not going to be right. And if you punch the right button, you get the information. Mm-hmm. But it don't give you the wisdom to interpret those. That's the main fallacy.
Yes, sir.
And you got to be prudent in anything you do. Mm-hmm. And you've got to base it on experience and some wisdom involved.
So all these buttons pushed out a high price, but we priced ourselves
out of the world market. Mm-hmm. Even domestic market to some extent.
Is that at what point, of course, you know, this went on for a long time, the co-op program did. When did we begin to price ourselves out? Do you think it's just been the last 3 or 4 years?
Oh, I think the crux of it came in 82.
Mm-hmm. Okay. With the big oversupply and the
decreased consumption mm-hmm. and these things that contributed to it, yeah. Taxes and high dollar.
Health issue.
Yeah. The import of burley tobacco.
Well, I think when they argue these kinds of things, and it's yet to be seen whether they'll take that tax off that they said was a temporary.
It's
tax.
Awful hard to get a tax off after they once put it on.
That's true.
My experience in doing the situation, the tax.
People have argued that won't affect the consumption, but you believe the price?
Oh, definitely. Mm-hmm. Definitely. After they put that 8 cents on, this figure showing it dropped.
I've seen figures of something like
that. I don't recall 7%. The figures, but I know it dropped.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then the health issue, as you said, is there.
Added to it.
High dollar. The Department of Agriculture, through the Secretary of Agriculture, they have something to do with establishing the quotas, don't they?
Oh, yes, the Secretary of Agriculture is the final say, so he announces his department and sets a quota, you know.
But now that's limited, according to the I guess, the confines of the program?
Well, traditionally, the program is set up on a supply figure of about 2.6 to 2.7 years supply in loan.
That was the ideal situation.
But it got up, we got over a year's extra supply. We got over 3.5 years supply.
Is that currently now?
Yes.
Now, even though those are averages, individual groups of tobacco, as you said, might be in storage 6 or 7 years,
yeah.
8 or 9 years.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. But you're thinking about the overall supply.
Overall, that includes what's under loans, government loans, the supplies of the users and the exporters.
That seems like a significant amount of tobacco to keep, you know, to be 2.5 years ahead.
When that comes out, it seems like I talk awful low. Do you detect that when I'm talking to you?
Not really. Sometimes I can't tell the way these work very good either.
Well, I get that all the time. We have it recorded, you know, and I listen to it once in a while. Uh-huh. It comes out way low.
Yeah, well,
and I don't realize I'm talking that low when I talk.
You've kind of got a low, easygoing voice.
Yeah.
So maybe it picks up that way.
That's the way it does.
This is side two of a tape with Joe McDaniel. You were talking about why you need that 2.5 year supply ahead. You mentioned that somebody might be conservative as far as in their buying.
Yes, and it's worked fine, and the companies, I think, have taken advantage of it and liked it.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Actually, this is a real boon to the companies so they can be insured of a constant supply.
That's right. Of course, they've got to have tobacco or they close their doors.
Right. If it weren't for an organization like this, I guess they would be forced to stock their own supplies.
That's right.
All those extra costs for them.
And that's the advantage of having some stability or price support. Because if you throw it open, 1 year, if you have a short crop, the prices would go way up, and the farmers would put the whole farm in tobacco. Next year, they would pass it up at a very, very low figure because they didn't need it.
Yeah. Well, the problem with doing that for the farmers would be right now, the farmer has kind of an assurance of some kind of income each year.
That's right. That's right. And well, and not only farmers, but small town of Centennial, where my hometown.
Yes, sir.
The bankers are involved in it. The merchants are. Listen, you let tobacco fade out of the picture. Listen, grass will grow in the streets of some of these country towns.
That's true, yeah. Well, what the criticisms then, we talk about there's an advantage to the farmers. Of course, then all the people surrounding the tobacco business, the warehousing, the merchants, and so forth, have an advantage.
Absolutely.
The warehouse or the industry has a sure, steady supply, and it really hasn't cost the taxpayer very much. I guess, you know, living in a tobacco state, we kind of feel a little put upon. Is that?
Well, getting back to Fluker versus Burley, when they come up with, I don't know what the final figure is. I've seen anywhere from up to $700 million loss on prior 82 crop.
Yes, sir.
Well, when you go to Congress that's not in love with tobacco to start with, and they see that figure. And a tremendous loan now that if they don't support it and it goes back to commodity credit, well, the government is going to be faced with upward to $3 billion. And if they'll have some unity in the different types of tobacco, which they haven't had up until now, principally from Fluker, why, it'll be a very minimal in comparison with $3
billion. I see. Right. So really, this plan, and I'm going to talk to you in a few minutes about the details of that, that's really the only way to save a significant amount of money for the taxpayer.
Oh, yes, that's right, but we have, well, for instance, Senator Metzenbaum and others of his philosophy that are against tobacco. Mm-hmm. he's against tobacco at all costs.
Yes.
He wants to do away with it. The government interference. But he's not going to stop people from smoking. And with this well growed here is imported from Mexico or Brazil or Zimbabwe or whatever.
Well, I think that's a point that probably needs to be made, and that people in the co-op and others make, that just doing away with the program is not going to do away with
absolutely right.
And if we do away with the program, we're essentially, particularly the small farmer. How does this program ensure the existence of the small farmer?
Well, he's got a right to his quota based on the history of that farm. Mm-hmm. And we maintain that ought to go with it as a covenant of his right, mm-hmm. and stays with that land. Because your tax-supported people, your city government, your educational system are based on assessment, the value of that farm. Mm-hmm. You take the support, the quota away from that farm, who's going to buy it? What's his chance of making his taxes on it? So this thing is entwined with the income and support of a world of a lot of people.
Well, for example, in counties like yours and mine, Harrison County, Mason County, now maybe what would happen, right now we have a lot of quotas with 5,000 pounds and 10,000 yeah. pounds, and farmers are able to eke an existence out. If that were eliminated, Harrison County might have just 4 or 5 very large tobacco farmers.
I would say maybe that they would be probably the only ones that could mm-hmm. could survive. Now, I don't know. That's a
sure,
supposition.
That's the future, right? But in a way, the tobacco program right now is ensuring a certain lifestyle
that's
for
right.
people that,
that's right.
that could disappear.
And you go to bank, a person that needs to borrow to put his crop out, and if you don't have support on, he's gonna view that pretty closely before he lets that money out, because he don't know what he's gonna have his ability to repay that loan.
There's no way of knowing how much he's gonna take in.
Stability. It's been beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you feel, of course, you've been president of this organization since?
Oh, I guess 6 or 7 years, mm-hmm. something like that.
Yeah, just fine. And of course, you came in and things were operating just fine,
yes.
and so forth. And then all these other conditions come out. How do you? Has it been particularly hard on you? You think? Do people understand the problems that the tobacco industry is facing?
I'll tell you, you can spend a lot of sleepless nights. Because people are well-meaning, but they're really the rank and file, I just don't think they have an understanding of this thing, the overall picture involved.
Yes, sir.
They mean yeah. well.
Right.
And this, for instance, in setting a quota for 83.
Yes, sir.
After that big crop of tobacco, 82. We recommend the quota stay the same. Another interest wanted the 6% increase, which they got. And the department, through pressures, we had to conduct an excess program, $33 million.
Yeah.
Which should never have been done.
Right.
We should not
have. Supply.
Well, our 33 million pounds, they increased it through quota 6%. So it bounces out to 66 or 65 million pounds. That ought never been.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
the farmer ought to took that back home and kept it off the loan.
Yes, sir.
Of course, it sold, but it still went into channels of trade, which they didn't buy from the co-op.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the
And it left us with this big supply on hands that we've been stuck with.
A lot of times, I guess, an individual can't see past his own self-interest.
Well, that's true. That's what it boils down to.
Can't see the future versus the...
Yeah, you can't see the forest for the trees.
I guess that's true. Let's move into... Well, before I move into the rentals plan that you've been instrumental in putting together, are there some people over the years that you've dealt with that you think are particularly significant? You mentioned Mr. Barry that's been with the co-op. He's the legal counsel.
Yes. He was present for a long while.
He was.
Yes.
And
very able. And
he worked on this plan a little bit too, I think.
The rentals plan.
Yes,
oh yes, he sat in on. I haven't sat in on all the negotiations.
Okay. Well, let's talk about that. This I guess began last year.
Yes.
And the co-op was faced with a tremendous oversupply.
Yes.
How did you perceive what happened?
Well, it really started, of course, flue-cured tobacco is, their market opened from about the middle of July.
Yes, sir.
So they were very anxious in trying to work out something with the companies to help relieve the situation. That the rentals came up with this plan, which I think it's, on our part, is a great help to us and the Burley growers.
What some of the individuals that you were working with the rentals people,
Ainsworth is one of the top fellows. We've talked with Clements, head leaf buyer, Julian Singer in the leaf department, and several of the top executives of the rentals plan were there at various times.
Now, companies and the tobacco farmer and so forth, the tobacco industry or the tobacco business across the board hasn't always been very unified.
Well, that's true. But the different varieties have been at odds.
Some people might think it would be in the self-interest of the company just to wait and let this thing fall apart and they can come in and pick up the pieces.
Well, I've said that. Mm-hmm. And really, that's true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If the commodity credit takes it on, what are they going to do with it back? They're going to sell it what they can get for it. And I think it's a beautiful gesture on the part of the companies to offer to take this, help us out of this oversupply. Of course, at the same time, they're getting it reduced from $1.75 or $1.78 this year will be down to $1.45.
Right. And, of course, what they're doing over the long run, I guess, is ensuring that steady supply.
That's right. I think it shows that they are really sincere in their belief that they want the association to exist in order to have a constant supply.
Well, you were saying the flu cure people were very interested in doing something about this. How did you proceed then?
Well, I was in on that first meeting at Winston-Salem.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, the flu cured people had agreed to accept a floor of $1.30 a pound.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we felt at that time that wouldn't satisfy the farmer,
mm-hmm.
and we wanted more, and which we helped out. In the next meeting they had, they finally raised it, flue cured, to $1.35.
Mm-hmm.
I think I've got my figures right. Anyway, it ended up at $1.45 and $1.40.
Yes, sir. Now, had the cooperative employed Mr. Forgy at that time?
We had barred Mr. Forgy to the outset.
Mm-hmm. To represent these interests.
He has a good connection with the federal administration,
yeah.
Being the campaign manager of the president,
right.
The vice president,
yes.
And Senator McConnell.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a very able,
capable.
Young, capable fellow.
Yeah. So you think then you've got a good person working in that?
We've got Mr. Berry and Larry Forgy.
Mm-hmm.
Two of the outstanding attorneys in the state trying to negotiate to have some unity to go to Congress.
So now you all worked on this best part of a year.
We're close to it. I think Mr. Corey went, I think he went on the payroll in November now. I'm not positive, but sometime it took him a little while to get oriented, you know.
And
but he's grasped the situation beautifully.
Yeah. Had to get the industries okay, and had to work.
Well, the different the farm bureaus and the different people that have are want to have a say so in saving the tobacco roll.
Mm-hmm. Now, what's the this plan, if enacted, is to go into effect with this next buying season?
Yes. I see. Yes.
Okay. So, of course, the farmer, as he looks at it, he might as well accept the rentals plan at $1.40 as to get $1.70 and then have to pay 30 cents on the next.
Sure, it bounces out practically the same, you know. Mm-hmm. And in addition to that, Reynolds said it over, or the company said all but two, mm-hmm. says that over a period of 5 years, we'll take the 82 crop at the floor price, mm-hmm. and it's got a markup on it. Mm-hmm. And the profit in that will go to the no net cost. They'll take the 84 crop mm-hmm. at the end of, at the cost price. But they don't want the 83 crop. If they do take it, it'll be at a 95% reduction.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure that 83
crop. Or if the commodity credit takes it and applies a no net cost, the funds in it, mm-hmm. they will take it at 90% of what's left. Mm-hmm. But it's going to be a loss in the 83 crop tobacco. But we maintain, if the department can see fit administratively, which our council says it's in the contract, that they'll take it over and give the associations some time to try to dispose of that, that we can do it, perhaps, and recover hay price on it. Now, that's problematical. There's no insurance. But that's what we're driving for.
I see. That 83 crop has been a real headache for you all.
Sure.
It's just.
But you know, if there was a shortage of tobacco, I don't think there's a doubt that it wouldn't go in the channels of trade and be usable.
Mm-hmm. The another big advantage of this program would be the fact that companies would be able to buy the tobacco at $1.40, and that would make foreign tobacco look less attractive to them.
Probably. That's right, and of course I think that with them obligating themselves on this surplus we've got to buy, well, you know they're not going to take this responsibility and import a huge amount of tobacco on top of what they got. They can't use that much tobacco. And in addition to the current crop.
What would happen then in the future with quotas and the support price and so forth under the plan?
Well, the companies are demanding a say-so in setting the quotas. Mm-hmm. In fact, one of the provisions they are to announce privately to some unconcerned corporation mm-hmm. their wants. And it just be strictly confidential. And they, in turn, give it to the secretary. And the co-ops will have a representative, and the growers will have a representative, and the exporters will have a representative. They put them together and announce the quota. The secretary would have the power to either increase it 3% or decrease it 3%. So, and they're going to help carry the no net cost from the first pound, 50-50 with the growers, up to 50 million pounds. And if it goes over that, why, There's a provision that they'll lower it back down to not over 80 million pounds. But that's, of course, that's to go through the mills of Congress. We don't know what the outcome is going to be. But it's a gesture on their part to help us get over this hump. And I'm thankful that they've come forth with some plan to help us survive.
Certainly.
Well, but some people don't agree with it. They think, well, look, they're getting a lot of cheap tobacco. But at the same time, if we're in a world market oriented, we're going to have to come down, so why not take advantage of their benevolence, as you might call it.
Well, yeah, it's kind of...
I don't know why that's the right word or not, but it's...
Better get it while you can.
Contributes to the relief of this situation we find ourselves in.
It's really not unsimilar or dissimilar to what's happening in other segments of the economy earlier when, for example, unions had to take cuts in the
pay. Sure.
And so forth to compete on this.
There's no question about it. I think we've got to tighten our belts.
Yeah.
We can save in here and there, and I still think it that support we can survive, mm-hmm. and I think tobacco will bring over that.
Yeah, that's
traditionally
that's
it always line. Has brought over the support price on it. Mm-hmm.
Yes, sir. That would even facilitate a lot of other things if the price were lowered and. A lot of it went over the support price. You'd soon get rid of your oversupply.
Well, that's right. And the companies, I think it's a nice setup. I didn't see nothing wrong with it.
The cooperative's existence is really dependent upon the farmers continually revoting this program in.
That's right.
When is their next opportunity to do that?
They vote on it this coming winter, February, I think.
So
another 3 years.
So they're kind of, right now, it's up in the air what they're doing.
They don't know what to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
As well as none of us know what the outcome is going to be.
There is more support for the program here, though, than there is in the flu cure market.
Well, I would guess that's true.
Yeah. Bucks here have always been way over 90%.
Oh, yes. Well, it's awful hard to have your cake and eat it, too. And they think they can buck the thing without any support. Some of them do. They are demanding that they can't produce tobacco for whatever the going and talk of support is. But I know if they exist, they're going to have to or not grow tobacco.
Yes. What about leasing? I guess it was during the last program where they made, for example, organizations, schools, and so forth, sell off their lease permanently. Do you think there needs to be some manipulation in that area?
Well, I think primarily, before we go to fine-tuning, we got to have a tobacco program.
Yes, sir.
And I think that can be amended over the years. And I think as of now that these subdivisions shouldn't have a quota.
Mm-hmm.
I think the airport shouldn't have a quota.
Yes, sir.
And I see no reason why the horse park should have a quota.
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm.
Those type of things, I think the quota should be taken away.
Who makes those kinds of decisions?
The department or the secretary.
Mm-hmm. Of course,
he's blamed with it. He has his advisors, of course.
Mm-hmm. Sure. You have your official duties in the cooperative as far as, you know, running these things and making contacts with the dealers and so forth. Is there very much work done in making new contacts, trying to set up?
This, for instance, the export people, mm-hmm. the dealers,
yes, sir.
They comb the whole world in trying to sell tobacco.
Mm-hmm.
So why should we try to? We still maintain a contribute to the Berlin Dark Leaf Tobacco Export Association.
Mm-hmm. I see.
And we have a top man now, Frank Snodgrass has been the managing director. Uh-huh. Now Ben Reeves mm-hmm. has been aide to Congressman Perkins for 13 years. And we are expecting him to
continue
on in that area, as well as help us in legislative wise, because he's very able person.
So those kind of people, they know this tobacco is here in storage, and they're out trying to market it.
He's on a trip now to the Far East.
Yeah. I heard that last with Red China.
Yeah.
I want to ask you too about most of the tobacco you deal with, I guess, is air cured burley. Do you have any of the other types? There's a do you take that under loan?
No, that's under loan, but under different organizations.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking like in the western part of the state, they have the
dark leaf and the fire cured.
But those fall under
their associations in their own.
I see. Okay.
That's largely chewing tobacco and snuff, you know.
There's been some talk about tobacco as far as alternate uses and so forth. Is there much possibility for that?
Well, I was talking to a quite influential banker here in this town last week, and he was wondering why they didn't put more research on developing protein.
Yes, sir.
Well, several, I think North Carolina first came out with this protein product in tobacco. But the cost of getting it out was so high, it was prohibitive, and I don't know whether they're pursuing it or not.
Yes. I guess one of the feelings, of course,
some years ago, not to interrupt you.
Yes, go ahead.
We had a little surplus tobacco, and we contracted with this research institute out at to find what the uses of tobacco could be. Mm-hmm. I've forgotten the call and the name.
The Tobacco Institute out there, I think.
No, that's over here now.
Yes, sir.
This is out at the, I want to call it Teapot Dome, but that's not it. Anyway, out on experiment station.
Uh-huh.
Well, anyway, we give them $10,000. Uh-huh. They come up with, said, well, you can take the fiber and make strawberry baskets out of it. But that's about the only thing we got for our money. But they didn't go into it thoroughly, you know.
It wasn't too much.
Of course, there's nicotine in it. You used to use nicotine to drench sheep with. Now there's no sheep in the country, practically. So we don't need that.
What about the, I guess one of the feelings is that, you know, there has been a significant drop in consumption, but even if consumption were to drop over the next 20 years, there'd still be a lot of people and a lot of tobacco being consumed.
Oh, yeah.
So,
well, there's about 53 million people in the United States smoking now.
I see.
It fell considerably, and I guess maybe they're smoking less than they did, even though people that smoke.
Yeah.
So, who knows what the future holds in consumption. But I'm hopeful that the Tobacco Research Institute over here on the campus of the UK will come up with some kind of a formula or a test where a person can know that he can't smoke without some risk, and the person that can smoke without too much risk.
Yeah, I've interviewed Mr.
Lake
Dr.
Davis.
Davis.
Yes, he's a Spaniard.
Yeah, I think that's the direction they're going.
Yeah.
Some people more susceptible than others.
That's right.
Let's try to identify those people.
But, I'm not a researcher by any means, stretch of the imagination, but I can't see where I smoke and you sitting over there, it can cause you to have a lung cancer.
Yeah,
I don't know, but that's one of the things.
That seems to be the big push with the anti-smoking people. Is to
and on airplanes, they change it. Well, I can sit, I've ridden an airplane, the smoke goes out the vent on top.
Mm-hmm.
The fellow in front of me don't even know I'm smoking. And really, where that's a problem, I don't know.
Yeah, but that is, as you
that know, is one of the...
That's a big push on right now. Well,
I appreciate you talking to me today.
Okay, you're entirely welcome.